Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with three wonderful bottles of Lillet. In front of me, the Blanc, the Rouge, the Rosé, and the wonderful Claire Needham, brand ambassador.
Thank you so much for having us.
The only one in the U.S. So you are truly Miss Lillet.
I am. I am the only ambassador in the United States. We do have a couple others on the European side, but I'm the only one here on stateside.
That is a lot of booze for one woman. That is a lot of control. What is that Simpsons quote? First you get the booze, then you get notes. First you get the sugar, then you get the women, then you get the power. And that had nothing to do with Lillet. Just I was referencing
it. No, but it is how I live my life, so I feel like it's okay,
So, to be a brand ambassador, I've always wondered this because you see people come into bars sometime with their bottles, trying to integrate it into a cocktail or some kind of service. But Lillet has such a part in cocktail culture in the U.S. now, but started way back in the late 1800s in France.
Yeah, so the popularity of Lillet, it started in the 1800s. It started in the Lillet Brothers started in 1872, and at the time, aperitifs were very, very popular in all of France, so they didn't bring it over to the U.S. Until more like the 30s is when they really started advertising and brought it back over stateside. But it's definitely in a lot of classic cocktails, classic cocktail culture, but we lost that train in the United States for a while in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and really only bringing it back in about the last 15 years. So my job, in a lot of ways, is to remind people of the uses of Lillet, of why Lillet was so popular way back when, reminding people to use it, to enjoy it, how it should be enjoyed, and introducing things like our newer varietal of our Lillet Rosé, which didn't actually come out until 2012.
So this isn't something like in your parents' liquor cabinet you'd find back when you were growing up, then take a little out, fill it up with water, put it back, and hope that there wasn't a line on there counting it. This is really new to our generation and kind of was removed from our culture up until, you said...
Yeah. Like the last 15 years, really, and 15, 20 years, kind of with the kickoff of the cocktail scene and Dale DeGroff and bringing back classic cocktails with Milk and Honey in 2000. But no, with Lillet, it's a funny thing. And I love the liquid and love working for the brand because of its wonderful iconic history and also because of just how delicious and fresh it is as a beverage on its own. A lot of people come to me and say, like, oh, Lillet, yeah, my mom used to drink that. Or, like, it was in the back of my refrigerator for 15 years, but I don't really know what to do with it. And so my job is to remind them why it was kind of purchase in the first place and to show them the wonderful things that you can do with it because it's just so versatile.
So you started your liquor and beverage career in New York, worked at the Beagle, at the wonderful Booker and Dax. Mm-hmm. You know, Dave Arnold has a show here on this station.
Yeah.
Maison Premier, Cienfuegos, Basic in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Did you find bottles of Lillet behind the bar or how did you start incorporating that into your repertoire?
Well, actually, the first Lillet cocktail I remember I ever had when I was, you know, probably shouldn't have been trying a cocktail. I probably wasn't of age yet. But I was, I started my kind of immersion into the food and beverage industry. I was working at a bar called Enoteca Liqueur, which no longer exists.
Wait, can we have a moment of silence for Enoteca? You don't even understand how that both the sandwich place and the Lower East Side spot were some of my favorite places to visit in New York.
I think I gained my college freshman 15 on cheese from Enoteca Liqueur, so I totally understand. But no, I was working as a waitress there, just kind of got the job off of Craigslist. And the bar program was being run by the wonderful Matt Piancentini, who now owns the Up and Up in the West Village. But he also owns Clyde Common, which is a very popular bar out in the Ace Hotel with Jeffrey Morgenthaler in Portland. And Matt was just, you know, a very unassuming guy, and we didn't really realize his sort of credibility in the cocktail world. And he started showing me, he showed me how to jigger. He showed me sort of the basics and started showing, you know, introducing me to spirits. He gave me books and was like, here, if you want to bartend, you have to know what you're working with. But he had a great cocktail with Lillet, which is one of the first things I ever tried, which is actually different than most Lillet cocktails. It's called a Golden Dog, and it's done, it's a shaken all spirit cocktail with Talisker scotch. So it's very smoky and bright. But that was my first sort of introduction to Lillet. And then I remember from there, I was kind of just became very interested in the product itself and the different variants and trying different aperitifs like Lillet, things like Dubonnet, and really getting involved with that. And then from there, when Matt actually was the one who had to open the Beagle years later, I'd worked at a few other bars before then. But he invited me to come and join that team, and I worked at the Beagle, and we had plenty of Lillet cocktails on that list. And I love to work with it. It's a great product. It's very versatile, and we have all three varietals. And then from there, I came to open Booker & Dax with Dave, learned a heck of a lot about a very different side of cocktail making. And kind of been around the block a little bit for that, and then came to work for the brand. So
yeah, you know, it's crazy seeing people's, you know, liquor collections at bars now. It's expansive, and everything has its place. But, you know, Lillet is not just a wine. It's not just a liqueur. It's, you know, one of these tonic wines, as you said, back in the day. And it has such versatility because it is that blend. Let's talk about what it's actually made of in that process.
Sure, absolutely. So it's the same recipe they've been using since the 1870s as far as the secret ingredients go. So it is one of the main prides that we have in Lillet is that it's from Bordeaux. So it's a wine base. So if it's 85% wine, and if you're using it, making a product with 85% wine, you want to use the best wine in the world. And we happen to be located in Poldensac in Bordeaux.
How convenient.
So we have, I know. So we have conveniently located to all these beautiful Sauternes wines. So Lillet itself, the Lillet Blanc, the classic, is made of Semillon, Sauvignon Blanc, and Muscadelle. So it's a white wine blend, same as a Sauternes, with a very secret, we have a secret recipe, which has been the same since the 1870s, of a blended fruit and citrus liqueur made up of orange peels from Haiti and Spain and some other fruits in there, which I... A, can't divulge, and B, don't know all of, because only our master distiller knows. And then there's the addition of quinine. So we use Peruvian cinchona bark and add that as well, and then age it for 6 months. So it's not a wine, it's not a liqueur, it's not a tonic. It's a blending of all these three really beautiful ingredients and using the best of those ingredients, and then blending them together and aging them in French oak to give them a really nice depth and quality and softness.
I mean, they're fined, they're racked, they're filtered. It truly is like, you know, a fine wine in how it's cared for. Mm-hmm. And when you say best, it's so true, because for years I thought I hated tonic water because I hated quinine.
Right.
And then I tasted real quinine.
Right.
And that's delicious.
Yeah. Well.
Well, not straight.
Not in its. Yeah. They did. I did taste it when I was at the Poldensac Distillery. I did taste quinine in its straight form, which I had never tried before. And no, it is not delicious.
Yeah. Like,
there is a reason people put these beautiful concoctions together to cover the flavor of quinine, which they were trying to administer to cure malaria.
I mean, let's talk about that. The medicinal purposes, because I think part of Lillet's popularity was also because of Louis Pasteur saying that wine was this healthy and hygienic thing, you know, and that was at the same time these aperitifs were really showing up in France.
Well, aperitifs were crazy in the 1800s. They were everywhere. They were commissioned by the government with kind of the initial aperitif recipe being done by Joseph Dubonnet. And it was they were commissioned by the government because the French Legion soldiers were coming back from Africa with malaria. And they needed some way to administer this very, very, very bitter tonic in an enjoyable fashion. And actually, Joseph Dubonnet's wife started, along with him, was making these concoctions, and she was kind of a socialite and started throwing these wine-based aperitif parties. And really, she was the one that kind of pushed it forward as an enjoyment beverage as opposed to just a medicinal beverage, and really moving forward with that. This was obviously prior to sort of the cocktail usage of them, but they were everywhere, and there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of aperitifs in the 1800s and 1900s in France. But Lillet is really the only one that is A, aged, and B, has stood the test of time in its original form and kind of still remains and running around today.
So. I mean, yeah, it's so ingrained in the culture and lifestyle, but also the design of... When you go to Paris, you see these ads, you know, of... these caricatures riding bikes or clowns in these pastel colors. And it's very, you know, like south of France almost and somewhat Bordeaux. But I really feel like it's based off of those original Lillet, you know, advertisements that you used to see.
Right. Well, the very famous for Lillet advertisements were the Aerobie posters, which were done in the 1930s, which was kind of their first really big campaign. And that's when you see the Lady of the Vine, where the very famous image of a kind of half-naked woman covered in vines holding a bottle of Lillet and laughing. And they're very iconic, and they are definitely very iconic images and are integrated into French culture. But it is funny because you think of like people riding around with Lillet in their baskets, and it seems like this wonderfully kind of picturesque but perhaps slightly more removed thing until you go to Bordeaux and you go to the south of France and everyone is riding around with baskets with Lillet and just kind of smiling and waving it. It's very funny, and it's very wonderful and kind of a charming way of life.
Whereas the Lillet came, what, on the BQE this time, or on the L train?
L train to an Uber. Yeah. Yes, that was sort of
how Lillet has advanced in the world and changed over time. Let's talk about these three varieties, and we'll crack it open and then go to break, because we're gonna take a couple shots during break, so you don't have to hear us slurping away.
Right.
But the Blanc. Came first.
Blanc came first in the 1800s. The Lillet brothers kind of started. That was their first one. They actually were very famous. They were wine merchants, but they had their own company that made marmalades and liqueurs. And so they started blending when everyone was in this aperitif craze, brought in the Bordeaux wine that they were already selling, brought in liqueurs, started to blend them together to kind of create their own concoction, and found one that they really, really loved. And that is the Lillet Blanc, which is a white wine base. And then we have the Lillet Rouge, which came out in the 1960s.
More for an American market.
More for the American market. And that was the grandson of the Lillet brothers, who's actually still alive today and the sweetest man in the world. He's in his 90s and still hangs out at the Lillet distillery, kicking it in his three-piece suit. He's fantastic. But he came out with the Lillet Rouge, more for the American market. And that's actually a red wine base. So it's Merlot and Cabernet. Same liqueur blend, same quinine, everything's the same except for the wine variants. And then in 2012, our current master distiller came out with the Lillet Rosé, which is actually done in the rosé champagne style. So it is still a white wine base like the Lillet Blanc, but they do, like they do with rosé champagne, they actually add a little bit of the rouge to it. And then the liqueur is different. The liqueur has more of a berry component, which gives it sort of that like really brightness that gives it almost like a grapefruity flavor, because you're getting the nice acid from all of those berries. But they're all aged for 6 months across the board in French oak. So it's the same aging process.
Well, we're going to open up those bottles and go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about National Aperitif Day on up May 21st. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app. the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Hey, and welcome back to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Yep, it's Lillet time. I know we're jumping the gun because it's a week and a half early for National Aperitif Day, happening mm-hmm. Thursday, May 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that campaign a little bit.
So it's National Aperitif Day. I definitely have already started celebrating. It's Aperitif Month. It's Aperitif weather.
If you listen to last week's show, I actually opened a bottle then, too.
Yeah, there you go. So we started about 4 years ago to sort of bring the idea of, I guess I should kind of say what an aperitif is to those who don't know.
Yeah.
But an aperitif is, Lillet is what we call sort of the quintessential French aperitif. But aperitif is just its sort of definition, I guess, is a low proof, drier beverage that's it's formulated to stimulate the appetite. So it's meant to kind of open up the palate in the way that you would have a digestif after dinner to settle the stomach. It's the opposite. It's sort of meant to excite your palate and your stomach for the meal to come. And there's a culture around it as well. It's about the moment and the time taken after the business day or in mid-afternoon with friends and family and maybe perhaps some little snacks. And it's sort of a more elegant styling of what we kind of in the U.S. know is a little bit faster paced, like happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more about taking that time to really get ready for the evening to come. And I love that. I think it's an awesome concept and ritual and not something that we are particularly accustomed to in the United States. But with Lillet, we wanted to sort of remind people about that and really bring it home. So we started sort of as tequila is to Cinco de Mayo, we sort of started our own celebration of National Aperitif Day about 4 years ago. It's still quite new. But doing activations and sampling and buying cocktails and supporting bar programs that do aperitifs and encouraging bar programs that don't necessarily to do aperitifs on this day and really bringing that home and reminding people of it. Whether it be aperitifs are also, you know, considered absinthe or a champagne or really reminding people of the beverage itself. But we with Lillet want to kind of celebrate what we do and our beverage to offer as well.
Yeah, so. And it was really in contemplating what the right drink for this show would be. Mm-hmm. You know, the food scene is Tuesday, 3 mm-hmm. p.m. And something, I mean, I think there was scotch on the show right before us, and there's mm-hmm. beer after. Two things that are fantastic drinks, but just never fit that time and place for me, and especially my attitude. I'm kind of like an even keel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lillet's always done that. You know, Lillet's always kind of been that wonderful interlude.
Yeah, it's perfect for that. And you know what? It makes my job fantastic because my job is to enjoy this at all hours of the day. But Lillet, it's in a lot of, as we said before, a lot of classic cocktails, but things like a Corpse Reviver and a Vesper, which are a little bit boozier, a little bit stronger, more for kind of the evening hours, perhaps after dinner. But in its state, Lillet is consumed primarily in France, just on ice. What we say on ice with a slice. So on ice with either a slice of orange or grapefruit. I actually love it with a slice of lime, just to give it a little bit of brightness and freshness. But it's very simple, or you can do it with, as we'll make in a little bit, just very light cocktails with a little bit of fruit, or blending other aperitifs together, or a little bit of champagne. It's a great afternoon sipper, for sure.
And tell me again what James Bond ordered.
It was the Vesper Martini. That was the Vesper Shaken Not Stirred. So with a bit of Quina Lillet. And Quina Lillet, we actually just dedicated one of the last Quina Lillet bottles to the Museum of the American Cocktail in New Orleans a couple weeks ago. But Quina Lillet is an old labeling of the Lillet we have now when they felt like the quinquina element, the cinchona bark, the quinine, was still necessary and relevant. So it's the old name of that. But they kind of realized when nobody needed malaria curing anymore that perhaps it wasn't as necessary to keep the Quina name.
Well, you don't know where everyone travels, you know.
Sure,
it's a great international beverage for that. Yeah,
but at the time they say, and then also to differentiate it from the recently released in the 70s when they changed it, Lillet Rouge, they changed the name to Lillet Blanc.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it was in Casino Royale, mm-hmm. and the book, you know, Ian Fleming's book came out in mm-hmm. I think the 50s, and mm-hmm. it was only on the big screen in 2006. Did you mm-hmm. guys see a big push again when that was released?
Yes, absolutely. It's always kind of a very exciting thing. It is a very, I guess you could say, sultry side to the Lillet story of having this kind of Vesper martini named after his very famous lover. And it's kind of an exciting thing for us, which gives another side to what we do.
And what is in the Vesper? It's one of those cocktails that I order and I love, and I drink so quickly I always forget to ask what's in it.
Well, a Vesper is made with gin. So usually a London Dry gin, so something like a Plymouth or Beefeater. London Dry. It's also really beautiful, though, I will say, with Hendrix. You get that kind of nice, bright cucumber notes in the rose water. But it's it's Lillet Blanc with vodka and gin. And then oftentimes, depending on the bar, people will add orange. I was always taught to make it with some orange bitters. You can either use an orange twist or a lemon twist. It's kind of one of those things like a martini. It's sort of how you like it. James Bond, of course, ordered it shaken, not stirred, though traditionally we would make something that was all spirits in a stirred fashion. But a shaken Vesper is quite nice. Get a little bit of effervescence going on in there. So.
And I've always wondered, is there a Corpse Reviver number one?
There is a Corpse Reviver number one. It's not very good. it doesn't have, well, first of all, it does not have Lillet in it.
Yeah.
But also, it's just sort of a, it's not as famous because it's just not great. And it has, it's really nothing like the Corpse Reviver number two at all. It's, I can't even really remember the recipe right now. But it's very different, and it's a stirred cocktail, I believe. And,
I know. I've had a Lillet, what is it called? Aviv, the strawberry, the mint.
Aviv, which is actually a very popular drink in, it's kind of our signature drink in Germany. So it's a big push there for that particular cocktail there. And it's just Lillet Blanc with a bit of soda and mint and strawberry. It's very, very simple and clean. But it's not something we push as much in the American market. I feel like in the American market, people are, if they're looking for a cocktail, oftentimes we kind of push things that have a little bit more of a flair. We also have an access to spirits that they don't necessarily have in that market. But yeah, it's not something that we've done as much in our campaign. I've definitely drank my share of them, but it's not as much as we've pushed in the United States.
And then this Lacacote, this cocktail that we're going to make today, tell me about it, because I see the strawberries and I've already finished my Lillet Rouge. So we got to hurry up and pour me another glass.
So this is the Lacacote, actually. So it's a very simple, but it's just done with a tiny bit of simple syrup. Simple syrup, a little bit of Aperol, just to like kind of bring out that grapefruity note in the Lillet Rosé. So it's a tiny bit of Aperol, a half part of Aperol, a quarter part of simple syrup, and two parts of Lillet Rosé. And then we're doing it with one strawberry, and then 4 to 5, depending on how sour you like something, how much acid you like, 4 to 5 chunks of lemon, so it's sixths, lemon cut in a sixth. Inside the glass, you don't need to muddle or anything. Just add ice, and then we're going to shake it vigorously and pour it back like we call country style, which is you pour all of the ingredients, including the ice, back into the glass.
So that's how I usually make cocktails, country style.
Country style.
No, I never knew there was a term for it.
Yeah, well, I can be fancy when you're making it. But, but yeah, no need to strain or anything. You want all of that fruit kind of dancing around in there along with the product itself. So...
Don't worry, they can't see you not using a strainer for that. So we're going to build this cocktail right now. And while we're doing this, too, we have two guests on the show who stopped by from the charity Rocking the Boat. So we have Andrea and Mike, and you guys are helping. It's not just me drinking all this Lillet, first of all. Disclaimer, yeah. So thank you for stopping by Heritage today. And what did you two think of the Lillet Rouge?
I will say this is my first time drinking the Rouge, and it's very nice. And it's great to hear the history behind it, the heritage, and that the recipe has stayed the same over the years. Perfect for this time of year. It's pretty hot out today, so I could drink this the rest of the day and be happy.
See, that was unrehearsed. see how magical Lillet is? It just brings it out in a person. And Mike, you're being way too quiet.
Yeah, it was a fantastic. And the funny thing was, I was just writing down on our list, because we're going away for Memorial Day weekend, that is now on the list of items that we're now going to have to get for Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just writing down like what you were putting in the Vesper, and then writing down what you're putting in for all this. So
you can just listen to the podcast again. We got it for you. We got you in chat. It's all good. Oh, wow. These look wonderful. They are spring.
Spring in a glass, yes. You get the kind of bright strawberry and the pink from the Lillet. Yeah, it's nice and springy and delicious. So you guys want to try one?
Yeah, you guys share one of those. Well, we're one big happy family here. As you remember, they were tonic-wise. They cured what ailed you. So we can share these things all around. Again, I've been a fan of Lillet for a long, long time. And thank you so much for being on.
Oh, thanks for
and throughout this month and until I run out of Lillet, I will have this as a fixture on my show. Just because it not only makes sense, but it just... It creates such a wonderful lifestyle. I mean, aside from all the culture and, you know, history ingrained in it, it just, like you said, slows everything down a little bit in the most wonderful of ways.
It does. And you were talking about bringing it, you know, I'm also going away for Memorial Day weekend. We're going to the lake and it's something, it's so easy to bring. You can just crack open a bottle. You can add it, you can have it just with ice. You can have it with seltzer. You can have, but there's something about the sort of, It's a ritual in cracking open an aperitif. It really is, and it's nice, and it's a great thing for getaways or for I had a picnic with a bunch of people on Sunday, and we cracked open just a nice bottle of Lillet, and it's so simple but just special. It's a special thing to have, and we're really proud to be able to deliver that to people and kind of celebrate it on National Aperitif Day.
Well, I mean, let's talk Philly, Dallas, San Francisco, you know, New Orleans, New York. There are so many bars actually participating in National Aperitif Day. Tell me some of the highlights.
We do have a lot of bars participating this year, which is fantastic. Here in New York City, we have Natasha David at Nightcap is doing some wonderful things for us. She always celebrates the aperitif. Every Monday, they have an aperitif hour, and she does beautiful cocktails over there. We're teaming up with Dear Irving, which is a wonderful kind of very French space. But Dear Irving on Irving and 18th, which is fantastic as well, run by Megan Dorman and Tom Richter, who actually worked with me at the Beagle, who's a good friend. And they're doing some beautiful drinks for us as well. So there's those events that are open to people, open to the public, celebrating, starting as, you know, because it is the aperitif hour, so starting at 5 o'clock. And then looking at our fantastic and favorite, some of the accounts that we're working with for Aperitif Day that we love, we're doing London Grill in Philly is going to be doing some activations for us. Hotel Zaza in Dallas is doing aperitifs by the pool, which will be lovely.
Wait, is that a new serving size I don't know about?
Aperitifs in the pool. Aperitifs by the pool would be, yes, I wish I was joining them for that. Yeah. Unfortunately, I will be here, which I can guarantee will be muggy and warm, but Harry's in San Francisco is doing some nice activations for us, as well as I've always had wonderful aperitifs at Sassafras in Los Angeles, which is a great bar. Sobu in New Orleans is doing some beautiful things with us right now. So there's just a lot of, it's everywhere. It's definitely present, and it's going to be more and more present as we get closer to National Aperitif Day and as the summer goes on. It's just a great summer cocktail.
And if you need more recipes, we can, of course, go on to Lillet.com.
Yeah, Lillet.com, or you can also always contact me directly. I love creating recipes for people, and I have more on my roster than I care to share, but it's just verbally, but I do like to share them with people all the time via email, so you can always reach out to me via Instagram or Twitter at Miss MSLILLET at Miss Lillet, and I will always happily share recipes with people.
Excellent. And it's at Little A, 1872.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're gonna aperitif like I will from now on, hashtag that shit.
Yeah.
Aperitif Day.
Aperitif Day, National Aperitif Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I had to get one cuss in there.
That's okay.
Enjoying it too much. Thank you again for being on, Claire, Lillet, yeah. Mike, and Andrea.
Thank
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Too much Lillet.
Too much Lillet. Yeah. Too much Lillet.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.